Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause, and first question for Bob. What was that music that was blaring so loud that it took me knocking on your door about a minute before you finally heard me?
I was in the basement, and I was blissfully unaware of your presence at my front door. I had on the Sonos Propagandi cranked up to, how high does Sonos go?
I don't know. I don't have one. 10?
Well, we know. You know now.
Yeah.
You may not have a number for it, but you know what it sounds like.
It sounds
the record's
loud.
Called Less Talk, More Rock.
Yeah. Oh, what a great title.
Right?
Yep.
Always a good philosophy.
Always a good one, yeah. And from what I heard, there was not a lot of talk, but there was a lot of rock going on.
Quite a bit of rocking.
Yep. No false advertising with those fellas.
Some mornings you wake up and you think, I need some punk.
Yeah.
I need a little punk rock. Mm-hmm. Do you have any punk bands you like? Because you're not really like an aggressive music guy.
I always like the Dead Kennedys.
That's great. Fantastic pick.
Yeah, so I'll go Dead Kennedys.
I could see you liking the Sex Pistols too. Is there a rock band?
Yeah, everyone likes it. I just didn't want to say Sex Pistols. But yeah, I mean, everyone, who doesn't like the Sex Pistols?
That was my band when I was a kid.
Yeah.
That was my entry to punk.
Yeah.
I was a ska kid, which, you know, I don't have a lot of guilty pleasures in life, but ska is close.
Is ska, because you know a lot more about music than I do, is that a guilty pleasure-ish thing? Is it sort of looked down upon on the music glitterari?
Yeah, it's kind of the wolf blast of music.
Mm. Gotcha, now you're speaking my language.
Right, it's simple.
Yep.
It's easy entry.
Yep, yeah.
You don't want to look down on it. People are allowed to like what they like, but it's not particularly sophisticated. There's some great ska acts, and particularly the original Jamaican ska artists who invented the form.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, most people join ska bands because they can't play.
Right.
And there's only three chords.
Yeah. It's horns, and everyone's dancing. You know, it's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
But no, you're right. The Wolf Blast actually is a perfect way to put it, because it's like stuff like that or Yellowtail's your entry level into wine. There's not a lot of depth. It's easy. It's fruity. And then eventually you move on to other stuff.
That said, the second generation of artists that came from the UK, English Beat, Specials, Selector, Bad Manners, Madness, they were great. And that was kind of the music of my youth.
Mm-hmm.
For a specific time, when I was transitioning from classic rock into other stuff, my gateway was ska, so I'll always have a soft spot for it. I used to draw little two-tone checker patterns on my jeans. And in fact, before we get to coaching, because there's a huge number of coaching topics to get to, the worst I ever looked in my whole life on purpose, I went downtown to the Eaton Center once, and I was wearing zoot suit pants, baggy pants, red canvas Converse high tops, a white dress shirt not tucked in, and my hair is curly, and I had that like 16-year-old, well, probably 15-year-old curly boy hair, so super tight ringlets, and I got Alberto Mousse, and I slicked the sides to my head.
Oh, no.
Right? So it was like completely, like the sides were plastered to the side of my skull. And the top was fluffed up with curls. So I looked like a sprig of broccoli.
Like, how did your parents feel about this? Did your friends make fun of you?
I went on my own because I wanted to be cool downtown.
Yeah. Were you?
I was downtown.
You were downtown. That is geographically correct.
It might have been cold out.
What did all your girlfriends say about that?
Oh, all my many girlfriends said, don't stop dressing this way, Bob.
What did they say to you, Bob, after another vigorous lovemaking session when you took off your zoot suit pants? Jesus.
You know, sometimes you need a failure to get you to the success.
Hey, long hair, bowling shoes, Phil Simms jersey. We've all been...
Yeah, you had some looks too.
Oh,
You had the Joe Dirt look.
Yeah.
Oh, Joe Dirt was a Giants fan.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Joe Dirt is... that is right. I want to apologize to my girlfriends from 1991 to like 93. That was tough years.
Like a combination of David Spade...
Yep.
And Brent Musburger.
Yes. Yeah. That is not a compliment. And accurate as well.
Sure. So you're the guy in sports media.
Sure.
Why don't you steer? There's obviously a million topics. We're going to get to all of them.
Yeah. Well, we won't. But, you know, I want to get your thoughts also on all these Canadians now saying they're going to play for Team Canada.
So happy.
I'm happy, and also I'm angry.
At the ones who aren't?
No, the ones who are. Where were you last summer?
Oh,
where were you last summer? Where have you, like, just, I'm so cynical about that, but we'll get to there.
Okay, but you know what? At least it's a step in the right direction.
It absolutely is. You can take away all the cynicism and anger from the last 19 years, and yes, this is way better than what it's ever been.
I just want them to build around Shea, unpronounceable name, Alexander.
Shea Gilgis Alexander.
Are you sure?
Nope. But I say it with confidence. That's why my favorite player.
SGA, baby.
Jamal Murray. Can't screw that one up.
RJ Barrett.
That's why I've always been a Serena and Venus Williams fan.
RJ Barrett was RJ Barretting last night.
Ooh, yeah.
We can get into that too.
But the big story, obviously. And I felt
What is it? Honestly, there's about 10 of them right now. What is the big story?
I think the big story, it's not necessarily Bill Peters, because we're just waiting for him to be let go. And yeah. Calgary's doing their due diligence, which is what they should do.
They're not. Well, they're doing their due. I would expect. Here's what I would expect.
Yeah.
That Calgary right now is making sure that they are going to pay out the least amount that they have to.
Yes. This is all
and
money
that they are the least suable possible.
Yes. That's 100% it. You know.
It's not is he fired or not. We're not sure. It's what do we owe this guy?
Yeah, if they'd fired him right away when the Frank Saravelli piece on TSN came out, then, yeah, they could be in hook for a lot more money and litigation and all this. What they're doing is smart. You know, it's just about...
So he's not fired. He's just out of a job.
Yeah.
As we speak at 10 o'clock on Thursday morning.
There is a better chance you will be coaching the Calgary Flames than Bill Peters.
I know what I wouldn't say.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know I could improve it in at least one area.
Yep. So, yeah, in terms of community relations.
Well, let's dive in with that, Matt. Since we're talking Bill Peters, I don't think there's any question that you have to fire him.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. Everybody does stupid things at some point in their life.
Yeah.
But there are some stupid things you don't do. Like, I've drank too much and completely, you know, blanked out on friends and not shown up to parties.
Yeah.
Boy, that was dumb.
Yeah.
I haven't gone into a room full of people and used racial epithets in a way that suggests, you know...
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's not a mistake. That's not a whoopsie.
Oh no!
Right?
It's not a slip of the tongue. And what was worse was then Bill brought Akeem Alisu into his office,
mm-hmm.
and Akeem's thinking, "Oh, okay, here comes the apology. Nope, more N bombs, and I'm tired of that music talk." It's like you're the coach, and the thing is. Like, remember when Kobe was fined for homophobic slurs?
Yeah.
Not good as well.
It was $500,000 if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but I put a higher onus on the coach because the coach is the leader, the authority figure. I hold them to a higher standard than player-on-player crime, which is not to defend or say that's fine. It's say I have tears. And also, when you're doing that to a young guy who's trying to make it in the AHL and trying to get into the NHL, you as the coach, you are the gatekeeper of power, so it's worse.
It's a great point, and I think this gets to the heart of the matter. Is what Bill Peters said worse coming out of his mouth than what might have come out of Kobe said? In a way, no. Right?
Yeah.
In a way, it's all equivalent.
It's all
like
bad.
You use the wrong words to describe certain groups, and it's all bad.
Yeah.
But because he's in a position of authority,
mm-hmm.
it changes.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about coaching and winning and power, because I think this week, in a lot of ways, it's all been about coaching,
yeah.
winning, and power.
Yes.
I heard this phrase that someone said, you can't abuse your power. That's a very interesting and fraught way to describe what a coach does with his team.
Mm-hmm.
Because a coach has to use his power.
Yep.
He has power.
Yep.
You know, remember when we used to go nuts that Randy Carlyle wouldn't sit Phil Kessel when Phil Kessel was floating?
Yep.
And you go, well, you'd never use your power that way. And you were like, damn it, you're the coach. You control minutes. You know, this is what you do. And in that context, we weren't saying, well, this is a guy's career and, you know, how can you mess around with a guy's livelihood? No, it was like this guy's being a real dick. And as a coach, the only lever of responsibility you can put on that is to manage his minutes.
Yes.
Bless you. But Phil Kessel's obviously a star and super paid and all that. But in this case with this kid, or in the case of Marner, even though he was going to be a star, he was still a kid.
He was a rookie.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an abuse of power.
Yes.
It's a guy who knows that he has authority over a particular person and is using that as an example of what he could do to the rest of the room, but just doesn't. And so you scapegoat that kid.
Yep.
That's an abuse of power.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, because it's funny, I got people texting. And if you, at any point in this podcast, if you think Bob and I are saying that Babcock and Peters are, you know, at all, you know, relatable or similar, we're not. They're very different. It's funny.
Well, no. They're relatable.
They're relatable in the sense they both are different. They're abuses of power.
They're examples of how coaches in the room try to control a room and the players.
Absolutely. Just, man, there's people like, how can you compare? I mean, Babcock was not being a racist. I'm like, I never once said that. Anyway, these are abuses of power. And it's funny with Babcock. You know, when I heard he got fired, as I'm flying to the Grey Cup to talk CFL.
Sorry. Did it happen before you got on the plane?
Oh, yeah.
Of course it did.
Everyone's like, oh, here comes Toronto. Are you going to talk the Leafs and not the Grey Cup? I'm like, I was planning on the Grey Cup, but Babcock got fired, so sorry.
The $50 million coach just got fired?
Yeah.
It may come up?
It may come up, yeah. I went from feeling kind of like, oh, Babcock got fired, that stunk, I'm not going to dance on its grave, it always sucks when someone gets fired. Yeah, I know he's getting a lot of money, but whatever. But then when I heard on Monday that the story, and Terry Koshan from The Sun originally did it, about the list that Babcock made Mitch Marner do, and then read it to the team from the hardest working, least hardworking guy, then all sympathy went away. My first thought was, you're a sociopath. Like, right. This is a sociopathic move by Mike Babcock.
It's a really interesting point, Matt, and I want to follow this. And it goes back to this theme I want to come up to again and again, which is the use of power versus the abuse of power.
Yes.
It's unrealistic to think that in a competitive world that's hierarchical in nature, that there won't be people with more power than others, and they're not going to use that power in the pursuit of winning.
Yeah.
If you think that's going to happen, it's not. And life in general doesn't work that way. People have bosses.
Yes.
Bosses have authority, right? It's when is it a good application of power and when is it a bad one?
Yes.
And this is a question that people have been asking themselves for thousands of years. Literally, if you read the writings of Confucius, tons of it is dedicated to what it means to be a good leader.
Mm-hmm. And it changes. The definition of what it means to be a good leader changes.
Well, it's circumstantial, but I also think that there are pillars that run through. Part of it is listening. Part of it is respect. Part of it is not asking someone to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. There's all kinds of things. But with the Bill Peters thing and the racial epithet, it was so disrespectful, not only to the guy that it was directed at, but also to the team, to be forced there and listen to it.
Yeah.
Right? To sort of throw that out there in almost a taunting way to suggest, like, nobody can say fuck all to me.
Yeah.
Because I am the coach. And they did say something to him. You know, it's funny how people will step up. But you have to feel very confident about your own position.
Oh, yeah.
In order to do that.
If you're a young player, you know, the coach has so much power. And then you, on the other end, feel powerless to do anything about it because you're just trying to, you're trying to make it in the most ultra competitive place in the world is professional sports.
And you've spent your whole life trying to get there.
Yeah.
And
you don't have a long chance.
No, you got one chance.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Eminem, you know, you get one chance you got, take your shot.
Something about mom's spaghetti.
Yeah. And barfing you know, gray hoodies. And
really never got into that part about, was Eminem's mom a really bad cook?
That's a great line about mom's spaghetti.
Yeah.
That's such a great line. Here's my question that I keep coming back to. There's a few things. One is whether it's Babcock or Peters, a lot of people in the media are saying old school tactics don't work anymore.
Yeah.
And I hate describing it that way.
So do I.
Right? Because it almost is like, you know, times have changed and that kind of thing's not okay anymore. It was never okay. It was never okay. It was tolerated. And there is a difference. But for the people who are the brunt of these things, it was never okay. It's just that we now have said you don't have to put up with that. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we flipped the moral value of this. We've just flipped whether or not people will be punished for doing it.
Yep. It's a good point.
So I just want to get away from that idea of like somehow the moral codes are changing. The moral codes are not changing. It was never okay to call black people the N-word.
Yes.
It was never okay to take a rookie and humiliate them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And the interesting thing going forward here is there'll be more players And some of them are going to come out and have legitimate complaints. Some of them, I get it, they're probably bitter they never got their chance. And it's going to be up to smart people to try to recognize what is the proper use of power and the abuse of it. I'm okay with every now and then if there is yelling. I'm okay with every now and then if, you know, you get into a player's, a coach gets into a player's face, as long as that's not the only note they use, that there's other times for empathy, other times for sympathy, other times when you have to use the full toolbox to get through to the players, where the basic goal is two things: make the player better than when they're young, make them a better player, make them a better person.
Babcock with Marner is a very interesting case study because it worked. Now, did it work because he did that? I don't know. Like, you can retcon any kind of explanation, but the fact is, when he was a kid, he was probably not as focused on what he needed to do physically and just in terms of effort as he could have been. Mm-hmm. And then he wound up like a great penalty killer.
Yeah,
like within a couple of years, we went from Marner, is he gonna be floater, is he gonna be okay on the boards, is he gonna be whatever, and then all of a sudden you're like, wow, this kid really digs in, you know.
Yeah.
And he's got gumption, and even Marner himself said, you know, like, my game has changed, right? Did Babcock do that? Are these the kinds of things that that helped? I don't know. But here's my point. Do you remember how we all freaked out when Marner was riding on the fourth line? And we're like, the coach is just trying to humiliate him into an effort. Mm. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember us wondering why he's being there. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that's okay.
Yes.
Like, it's being hard on the guy.
Yeah.
You might even be wrong.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
Yeah, of course.
What you can't do... You could have him, Marner, you could pull him aside and say, I want you to write a list of who you think the hardest working people are, but you don't share it.
You do not.
That's between you and him.
Yeah.
And you say, you see who's at the bottom of the list? Don't be like them. You see who's at the top of the list? You be like them. And nobody outside the room ever knows. I don't know if that's a good idea, but I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
The second you share it, though, all these things we've discussed, which are ass-kicking tactics, turn into abuse.
Yes.
Where you're basically, it's like, you know, when your dog, you're training your dog and your dog poops on the carpet.
And then you wipe the dog's face into the poop.
Well, I don't know if you do that, but.
I heard that. I don't have a dog, but I heard that's one thing.
I'd never heard that.
Yeah.
No, but I know lots of people would like yell and point at the poop and try and like create this negative connotation. Like, you don't treat a human being like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what he was doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's funny. I think a lot of people, their perception of Babcock switched at the moment. When Mitch Marner, you know, and good masters and Kristen Shilton asked him about it, he's like, yep, that happened. And then I remember hearing that sound and my jaw dropped. I'm like, really? That happened? And then at that point, it's like, bleep you, Babcock. You've got to go and you've got to seriously reinvent what you think is proper coaching.
It's so interesting you say that, Matty, because you know what else flipped? My impression of the players.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading my tweets that I sent out after the Pittsburgh game,
and
they were all about spoiled millennials.
Yeah.
And how mad this market has been at these kids that are super paid and they're underperforming. And why can't they just put a harder effort?
Yeah.
And then you realize, oh, they hate where they work.
Mm-hmm.
They hate this guy.
Yeah.
They've totally tuned him out. And this guy is just a relentless buzzsaw who's grinding on them every single day, and they hate their lives.
Yeah. And then I made, to add to that, I made the joke, okay, Paul Marner, sorry. Darren Ferris, sorry. We were snarky about you guys. We're sorry.
It's funny because I think almost in a dog whistly kind of way, like Dubas made sure that his stars knew that his coach was going to be fired. So even though we're negotiating and you may not want to play for this guy, I haven't endorsed him.
Yep.
I've endorsed you.
Yeah.
But I haven't endorsed him.
Yep.
I want to talk a bit about Babcock because we haven't actually had a chance to talk about the firing and then their place in Sheldon Keefe. It's amazing to me about how the knee-jerk reaction when he was let go was to defend his first 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? They had back-to-back 100-point seasons, and he pulled them out of being a laughingstock of the league, gave them credibility at a time when it was desperate. He might be the single most important person during that whole process, in terms of trying to restore the credibility of the franchise.
Absolutely.
To this point.
Yep.
And how that all went away with this story.
It all went away. It
all went away.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to use analogies where I'm not comparing Babcock to these people. These are funky. These are analogies that are troublesome. But Bill Cosby
was America's dad. Now he's America's rapist.
Mm-hmm. And unrepentant.
And unrepentant. And it's like what you do later can you it's very easy to forget about your past if you do something heinous. And again, it's a clunky comparison, but with Mike Babcock, he brought credibility. That's the perfect word. He's like, what? He chose here? And the cynics would say, well, they paid him a lot of money, but he still chose to come to Toronto after we dealt with, you know, Carlisle and Wilson and Horacek and waffles being thrown and jerseys being thrown and Salute Gate and all these things. And then Babcock came, and so much of that, of those bad stories, so much of the negativity, it went away.
And the discipline that we knew he would bring was so desperately craved.
Yes.
Because it felt like the lunatics were running the asylum.
Yeah.
And he came in and immediately the team played discipline. It was about, you know, like button down performances, both mm-hmm. on and off the ice. And what had gone from a team of perceivably jerks, mm-hmm. Certainly underperformers,
yeah,
became like this gutty, gritty team that couldn't do enough for this franchise and this market.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was.
It was great.
The first year they made the playoffs on the second
The Washington series. How exciting was that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, go back and look at when they clinched. It was a win against Pittsburgh when Anderson got hurt, and it was Curtis McElhaney that came in. A backup, you know, to save the day.
Okay, can I make a point here?
Yeah.
And here's where we can draw a line between Peters and Babcock.
Mm-hmm.
What Peters did was just socially abhorrent.
Yeah.
It was ignorant. And I'm not sure that it was really in the pursuit of winning either. Like, you can say it was an abuse of power. It certainly was that.
Yeah.
But there's not a ton of logic to it.
No.
It was just a really dumb, improper thing to do. But I don't see the point other than just trying to say, hey, I run this room.
Check
it's not like a strategy.
Yeah. Basically, he's waving racism in the face of a black player because he knows he can't.
Because I know I can.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some, you know, power play attached to that. Obviously, there is. But I guess my point is it's different than what Babcock did, because Babcock literally sat there, formulated a plan, and executed that plan.
Yeah.
And it was a plan that was devoid of any empathy or intelligent thinking. One thing feels very sort of like not logical, whereas Babcock's thing is like all about the plan.
Yeah. This was his idea to get the most out of Marner. You know.
It sounds like he's done it before.
Yeah.
Like he's done it with staff and...
It's just, you just ruin trust. You ruin trust with that. Humiliation is never, ever, like, there's different forms. Like, that's real humiliation. Demoting a guy to the fourth line, that might be a little bit professionally humiliating, but that's different than on a human level. And by reading that list to the rest of the team, that took it away from trying to be professional.
Do you remember Rondé Hollis-Jefferson from the Raptors in preseason?
Yes.
And then what happened to his playing time?
For people who don't know, Nick Nurse openly questioned him and said, I don't like these guys. Defensively, they're not getting it. I'm not playing them.
Masai Ujiri brings in a few guys.
Yep.
And they're not bringing it.
Yeah.
And he's like, basically, without saying it, look, it's a championship team. And we play championship defense. And if you're going to come in and try to crack our lineup, you got to play like they do.
Yeah.
And these guys aren't. And I'm not going to play them.
Yeah.
Think about it. Like, that's not so far... Like, it's far in a lot of different ways, but it's not so far than not playing Jason Spezza.
Yeah.
Right? The GM brings in someone that's supposed to help, and the coach says, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Masai Ujiri and Nick Nurse were obviously on board because they saw the play, and the effort probably wasn't there. But where's Rondé Hollis-Jefferson now?
He is a critical part of that bench.
He's so good.
Yeah.
And how's his effort?
It's everything you want it to be.
It's sterling.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah. There was a play last night. Just got the offensive rebound, kicked it out for, I forget who hit a three. You know, like you saw that effort.
And if you had to guess, we don't know this, but if you had to guess, would you say Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, the real dominant veteran voices in the room, do you think they would have been behind Nick Nurse saying, sit his ass until he picks up the, you know, or do you think they would have been against it?
Oh, they would have been for it.
Right. So flip that over to the Leafs side with Babcock,
who
embarrasses the kid.
Mm-hmm. Embarrass Spezza.
Right.
You know, in the first game.
And the room hates it.
Yeah.
And he's doing it just to show, A, I'm in charge of the room, and B, he's doing it to thumb his nose at his boss, Dubas.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything that you want me to do because I'm going to do it my way no matter what tools you give me.
The cracks with Babcock, I think, really started in the after the Boston series last year. Where
in the post-game presser?
The post-game, when he did not take any blame. When he was asked, you know, what could you have done different? And within 5 seconds, he's like, you know, there's a lot of other coaches that wishes that were there. They had the opportunity we were at, you know, that we got to a game 7 of the first round of the playoffs. And that was sort of the first moment, like, huh, okay, noted. And then Jason Spezza not playing him because he's going to work on his PK, but he's going to play in the second game against Columbus, though you're not going to play him against Ottawa. Then it's like, huh, noted. And then, like, it was moments like that, you know, when it really started to hit home that, okay, maybe Mike Commodore isn't as complete a loon as he seems on social media.
Well, when Mark Fraser jumped in and backed him up, and then other players started to jump in, we've heard stories about Babcock being unlikable for years.
Oh, yeah. But coaches are always unlikable.
No, but there's unlikable, and then there's guys who just won't play for that guy.
Like,
we've talked on this pod, and it's been said lots of times in the hockey world about how Detroit struggled to get high-priced free agents. And one of the reasons people thought, even though they're a marquee franchise with a long-standing tradition of success and had a great front office group, was that guys didn't want to go play for Babcock because he shits on you.
Yeah. It's funny. I
guys will be pushed.
What's that?
Guys will be pushed.
Yeah.
But they won't be disrespected.
Yes. Yeah. And there is a difference. And that's going to be the thing going forward. When other players, when we hear other stories of other coaches, you know, it's, was that player pushed or was that player disrespected? And that's going to be murky because that's up for interpretation.
And that's one of the things about use of power versus abuse of power, where as a leader, you have to be able to read the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you say, here's the way I do things, and you either do it the way I do it or not, it is a recipe for an abuse of power. Because you have to be able to look at someone and see how are they responding to the kinds of pressures you are putting on them.
Yeah.
You know, there are times in my career where I think about, I was scared for my spot on the roster of talent, you know, or I felt like you're just not always as secure as you could be. And I was pretty vulnerable in those moments to being pushed around. The good bosses helped to build that back up.
Yeah.
The bad bosses just used it to kick me around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's good leadership. Like, it's funny, Matt, that our whole school system, not to make this too macro, but we talk so much about IQ and smarts and what's the task you can do and how fast can you perform it and how often can you perform it correctly.
Yeah.
But we don't talk a lot about EQ, which is something called emotional quotient. We talk a lot about intellect because intellect's about doing a task quickly, efficiently, and repeatably.
And it's also easier to... You quantify. Know, to equate it. Okay, to quantify. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But more and more, I'm reading about how these big companies are looking for people who have competence, obviously, but emotional intelligence. Because if you alienate people, tasks don't get done right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I feel like these coaches need is more and more. Like people talk about, oh, you got to be a player's coach. And they almost make it sound like, oh, these kids today, they need to be babied. No. It's not that they need to be babied. They just need to be heard.
Yeah. I'm going to use the term sociopath, not psychopath, because those are different.
There is a difference. And I like your use of the term sociopath.
Yeah, it works here. Because they've done studies just to go to, you mentioned EQ, maybe thinking about, you know, that CEOs, high-level politicians, and I would throw coaches. All of them, I think, have low EQ. Bill Belichick. Does he seem to have in some ways, he just seems like just such a bad person, just a rude, dismissive person.
And yet a genius level of IQ.
We don't know what happened between Popovich and Kawhi Leonard. Something happened there.
Right.
And also Popovich can be rude I wonder if
that's an interesting point. I want to follow up on this. Finish your point. Yeah.
I just wonder if these positions to succeed at the highest level, it's almost impossible to be very successful at that and have a high EQ.
Okay, I don't think so, and here's why. Because Phil Jackson may not have been the X's and O's master of all time, but he had an enormously high EQ. And he wasn't soft. Like, he would kick guys' asses. You hear a story about Phil. Like, Phil could be really, really hard on players. But he also knew when to bend. And he also knew how to put people in positions where they might flourish.
Yeah.
Right? That's also part of EQ, is understanding what's going to get the best out of this person.
Yeah.
It's like working out in a weird way. Like, if you work out a lot, you're going to get stronger. If you work out wrong, you're going to hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And all the willpower and effort in the world doesn't matter. If you do it wrong, you're just going to hurt yourself, right? Bill Belichick, I want to go back to your point there, though. He succeeds because Tom Brady is there.
It helps.
No, it's the key.
It is the key. Yeah.
Because Tom Brady, being probably the best quarterback of all time, and in that room, and 100% on Bill's page, polices the room.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to hate Bill, because then you also have to hate Tom, and there's just too many layers. And they also, because Robert Kraft completely empowers Bill Belichick, and therefore Tom Brady, they only bring in people who will listen.
Yep.
Like, how many guys have they shuttled out? Because they're just like, nope, not our kind, not our type.
Yep.
It's all about Bill's system. Love it or leave it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, I wonder if you're...
Bill's system, like, he's my pal.
Yeah. I actually, you know, one of my favorite stories about just coaches understanding emotion was Bill Parcells, who, that's
where... Oh, Bill!
Yeah, that's where Belichick comes from. He used to, if Lawrence Taylor had a bad week of practice or thought wasn't trying his best, he would show footage of whoever the young, hot pass rusher is. And like Bruce Smith back in the day, or guys like that. Yeah, and he would say to his offense, and like, they'd be having a meeting with the whole team there, and he would be praising, like, look at this guy get off the line of scrimmage. Look at him get the quarterback. We're going to have a hard time blocking this guy. This is exactly, you know, the kind of player that can, you know, and Lawrence Taylor would be pissed off. He'd sit there, and he'd be seething about it, and then he'd go and have, you know, four sacks on the next game.
Right.
Sneaky.
Right, like the water boy, where he would see, like, Henry Winkler's face on top of the quarterback's head.
Exactly.
Ooh, and just level them.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Bill Parcells called Terry Glenn "she"?
Yep.
When he was a wide receiver and with the, you could never do that now.
Nope.
Not only could you not do that now because it's, I think, an idea of
denigrating women, saying, right? "Oh, she, haha, you're weak, you're a woman."
But I also don't think a coach could go in public and talk that way about a player as casually.
Yeah.
As you know, like, never mind how he chose to do it and the inappropriateness of the language he used. Just the fact that you would use a public forum and just say, yeah, this guy sucks so bad and I hate him. Like, you couldn't be so casual about it. But Bill Parcells back in the day had so much power and so much respect. The player was seen as kind of like a afterthought, even though Terry Glenn was a very good player.
Yes, he was. Really good receiver.
You know, this was what it goes to. And here's one of the things I want to talk to you about. People talk about how the old way of doing things is under siege.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as we said before, I refute that language. What I find really interesting is the concept of winning and what it takes to win is being redefined. Here's my point. I want to use an anecdote here. One of the best horror movies of all time is The Shining.
Yes.
You and I love it.
Yep.
And we would both agree that Shelley Duvall's performance in The Shining is one of the great horror movie performances on screen of all time.
Absolutely.
Right? Stanley Kubrick's a genius, and he directed that film about as well as you can, right? He was a maniac.
Yes.
To use your Babcock word, a sociopath. He would run her through take after take after take until she was almost hysterical. And then in between takes, he'd be nice and friendly to Jack Nicholson. This is what I've read, you know? So he was pushing Jack hard, but he'd be like, okay, Jack, whatever, you know? And then with her, he'd be like, come on, Shelley.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole crew of people here. Can you get it goddamn right?
Ugh.
And broke her down almost, past the point of tears, but almost to breakdown. And people have said, those around her, that maybe she was never the same again because it was so emotionally stressful. Here's what Kubrick got out of that. Greatest horror movie of all time.
Yeah.
Here's what Shelley Duvall got out of that. A horrible experience that may have damaged her forever. And here we are enjoying it.
Yeah.
If that story came out today and not in 1980, would we still feel good about the movie? Kubrick won.
Yeah.
Kubrick won. He got exactly what he wanted.
Yeah.
He destroyed someone in the process. Do we still enjoy that?
No. We consume it very differently.
I think
at
so
the
too.
Very least, you know, there is guilt in our enjoyment of it.
Right.
It's almost like, you know, when we watch football now, there's guilt when you see some of the hits to the head versus in the 90s. You're like, ah, come on, walk it off. Look, he's going to the wrong sideline. He really got his bell rung. Yark, yark,
yark, yark, yark. You know, Bruce Arthur of the Star is fond of quoting a Ray Ratto quote from the San Francisco Chronicle, I guess it is.
Yep.
But this is Ray Ratto's quote. Everything is a guilty pleasure if you know how it's made.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so this is why I think our definition of winning is really changing.
Because
it takes so much.
It does. The sacrifice, the hours, everything required.
And sometimes bad behavior.
Yeah, sometimes bad behavior. And winning takes divorces. And, I mean, now we're going to go down a dark turn for a second.
Oh, yeah, as opposed to the rest of the podcast. Yeah,
it has been a dark one. It really has been. Like, I wonder... Donovan McNabb had his best success with Andy Reid.
Right.
Michael Vick resurgent with Andy Reid. Alex Smith had a couple of years where he was a downfield passer. Downfield with Andy Reid. Patrick Mahomes in this offense now, you know, the common denominator is Andy Reid. I wonder, does Andy, him never being with his family and his one son, you know, committed suicide? And I'm not making a direct connection, but I wonder, does Andy think the sacrifices that I've done for winning, you know, the definition, we're winning, it hurts things that the fan can't see. The family unit, dad not being around. I mean, how many coaches get divorced? Like you know,
but everything is.
Yeah.
If you want to be at the top level of anything.
Of anything.
It's not healthy.
Oh, no.
Right? You want to be the world's greatest ballerina.
Yeah.
You want to be the world's greatest, you know, cardiac surgeon.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
You have to give up stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I remember we were in Philadelphia having a meal, Landsberg and I, and on the menu was steak vermeil, you know, named after Dick Vermeil, the famously hardworking, right?
Yeah.
And so he looks at this the thing and he says to the server, he points to the meal and he says, do I have to go eat this at my desk?
Yeah, exactly. Because, and it's a funny joke, but then it's like, oh yeah, because Dick never was around his family because he's trying to figure out how to, you know.
Right. It's Tuesday evening at 11:30 p.m. And
he's trying to figure out how do I block Lawrence Taylor because I know that Bill Parcells is coming up with something and I've got to protect Ron Jaworski.
You know what's interesting too about that is, and this is how cultures start to form.
Yeah.
So say you're on the coaching staff and Dick Vermeil is there at 11:30.
Yeah.
You going home?
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're the assistant.
Are you going home?
You're the linebacker coach and you're going home and the head coach is there. No, you're not.
Right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, if you try to have anything resembling a life, you're quitting on the team.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's like in everything. To get to my own life, I think it's one reason, like I have a good level of ambition. But I know I'm not the most ambitious person at all.
But you do have a very strong work ethic, though.
Yeah. Oh, no. I do, because I don't want to embarrass myself, and I don't like to. I don't like to let people down.
I also think that you respect the gig.
Yeah.
I think you have a healthy sense of respect for doing a good job. I've always thought that about you.
Thank you. But I think part of the reason why I've never had that ultimate ambition to be the best. You know, okay, you're on midday. You got to get on a drive time. How do you get on a drive? I have the work ethic and all that, but I don't have that extreme high level because I will lose friends and family and I will have to sacrifice things I don't want to. And to me, at the end of the day, if I got more days where I'm like, oh, good, I'm happy. I've enjoyed this chunk of my life. Then that to me is enough of a win.
Okay. So since we're having real talk here.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I always liked working with you, apart from the ease and the creative chemistry we have, it's because I always thought your perspective helped me because I am the kind of person who will push extra hard.
Yes.
My ambition.
You have higher ambitions than you. You've got more, like if it was like Dungeons and Dragons, you know, like out of 18, you've got a higher ambition
score
than I do.
My emotion, absolutely. My ambitious constitution is at least a 16.
Yeah, exactly.
And it used to drive me nuts that you wouldn't be trying to make us the most popular show in the country.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I respected it and I appreciated it, you know, but in a different environment, I probably could have gone real megalomaniac.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Mm-hmm. You know, the funny thing about it is though, I never felt good about pushing other people necessarily, like certainly not in a Babcockian kind of way.
Yeah.
But I would push myself really hard.
Yeah.
To the point where I got really sick.
Yeah.
Like I just pushed too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I do understand that desire to win and how far you will go to win. Like I looked at my own health and said, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to push right through it.
Yeah.
Until my body said, ha ha, yeah. I guess he's actually in control.
Yeah.
and then, you know, then we have the last 5 years. But winning, I think now, like if I said to you, hey man, the Leafs could win a Stanley Cup
mm-hmm.
with Babcock, but here's how he treats his players. Do you still feel good about that win?
Oh yeah.
Right? Like that's a complicated question.
It is. Oh, absolutely it is.
Like they were shit. So it's easy to say, you got to get this guy out of here. He's ruining everything. And you know why?
Because mm-hmm.
he's not winning.
Yeah.
But what if he is winning?
What if the team had gotten off to, this is an interesting question here. If the Leafs had gotten off to a Tampa Bay start from last year, you know, they're like 18-4.
Right.
And then the Koshan story happens and we find out that when Mitch Marner was a rookie, Mike Babcock did this heinous, embarrassing, abusive thing to the player. But then you go, that's horrible. And then you look at the standings. They're like, oh my God, they won 5 of 6 on that West Coast swing. Damn it. What, like,
it's, and yeah. And it's a great point because then you say, it worked.
It worked.
Right?
Yeah.
So what Babcock was doing, is it bad because it's morally wrong?
Yeah. Oh,
or
yeah.
Is it bad because this isn't getting us any closer to winning?
Oh, yeah. Well, it goes back to morality and sports, your sports happy. When they meet, sometimes you have to ask yourself some questions and you're not going to like the answers.
Well, I generally, you know, I was watching John Oliver and he was talking about the fashion industry
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about how you shop at some of these outlet places and like, well, I can go in there and get a pair of jeans for $8. That's incredible. And
yep.
I have no idea how that's possible. And he just looks at camera and goes, yes, you do.
Yeah,
you know exactly how that's possible. You just don't want to think about it
because
it's a little uncomfortable why one pair of jeans costs $250, but yours costs $8.
Yeah.
How's that possible? You know how that's possible.
When you get the club pack of really cheap chicken breast.
Right. Those, great analogy.
You know, those, they weren't all on fields just clucking away. You know, they were crammed into tiny cages.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, we all do know. Man.
See, this is a really, really hard thing about where we are in our culture right now.
Yeah.
Because our awareness of, and I believe this is a great thing. Like the story of the 20th century is this expanding palette of our understanding of a human's rights.
Yeah.
Part of it is led through the growth of democracy, you know, through the civil rights movement, the Equal Rights Amendment, like just groups gaining more equal voices.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Now that we believe that people deserve to be treated fairly, I got to give stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
Ah,
no.
This is why all this talk about how, you know, we can't do things the way we used to do them in the old ways. The old ways sucked, guys. They sucked. They just didn't suck for everybody who was winning.
Yeah.
But they sucked for most people. And now those people aren't forced to lose in the same way anymore. And everyone's like, I don't know about the old ways were pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, it comes back to winning.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to win less to do it right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. In terms of the clothes you buy, your smartphone, food, like everything, you know, has its, there's a reason why things cost the way they do. And thank God you and me were born in North America.
Mm-hmm.
It's the single luckiest thing is the geographical.
Well, that's only true though, because you and I were born into white upper class families. Like my family wasn't born upper class, but they, you know, my dad got a bunch of good jobs. I mean, there's cash in the family now.
Yeah.
But if you don't have cash or if you're not white or you're not a guy, like being in North America is not that easy.
Oh no, but I'm comparing it. Even if it's better to be, I would imagine it's better to be poor in Toronto than say being poor and working in a sweatshop in other parts of the world.
Certainly there's more opportunity to change your life around.
Yes.
And I don't know where you're getting with
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I was very disappointed in Ron McLean's mea culpa after Don Cherry was fired.
Yeah.
And only because, and it was a very difficult position to be in.
Yeah.
And not just because it was kind of rambly. I actually kind of liked that because it felt like it was coming from the heart.
Yeah, I don't want it scripted.
Yeah, it wasn't scripted by the, you know, by the public relations department at Sportsnet, right?
Yeah.
Where he just came out and did the prepared statement.
And why in the middle of that did he mention that if you bundle with Rogers, you could save money on your internet? Odd apology.
Wow, this sports pack sounds amazing. But what I didn't like about it was it became more about the show and Don's place and culture and his relationship with Don and how things were changing and all that. And I thought, you know, you're really missing an opportunity to address the fact that maybe hockey needs to look at itself a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you're not the aggrieved party here. Like, the worst thing this week did not happen to Ron McLean or Don Cherry. The worst thing that happened this week is for all the people who are immigrants in this country that have people point at them and say, you're not real Canadians.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing that happened in the last 7 days
yes.
since that coach's corner. You know, your week may have been tough.
Yeah. Not an easy week for you, Ron. No right? one's denying
it. And we're not denying that.
No.
But don't put your situation above everybody else because they're the real parties that need the help right now, not you.
Yeah. It's been a pretty heavy...
Really heavy.
Really heavy.
You know,
really
I even have podcast. More questions, but I kind of don't want to talk about that.
I know.
Anymore. Like, I'm just my...
Hey, the Leafs 6-0.
I know we didn't even get into the game.
Hey, by the way,
talk Jeff Pollock, and then let's talk about nice thing. Way, honestly, like I'm just so bummed right now.
The joke that I made was, I don't know if you know this, Bob, but every time Tyson Barry scores, Mike Babcock loses his wings. By the way, yes, Bob mentioned Jeff Pollock. Who is Jeff Pollock? You asked. I'm glad you asked that question. Here's the answer. He's our lawyer. Like, he's legitimately our lawyer. Makes me feel fancy, like an adult. And the great thing about Jeff Pollock is, A, he's very good at his job. B, his IQ and his EQ are very high. Like, this is a very nice, sympathetic guy. And you will trust him if you need any help with anything to do with the law. And if you want to get a hold of him, 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. Or you can contact him, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. He is our lawyer. He is our friend. And if you need legal help, I can't recommend anyone higher than Jeff.
Let's talk about the Leafers. 6-0. You know what I loved about that game?
Mm.
I mean, it was pretty... You know, like, what are you going
to
say?
We got to relax. We got to relax. Just enjoy the game. Hey, they scored again, you know?
But you know what I really loved about it, though? Mm. They looked like they wanted to give Freddie the shutout.
Yeah.
It looked like that was important to that team. Like, okay, we really let the Kaskasuo. I always have a hard time with that.
Kaskasuo.
Thank you. I'm leaning on you now for pronunciation.
That's not good.
That ain't good.
When I saw that they're calling that guy up, I'm like, shit.
Damn it.
All right. Let's try this name.
I liked it almost as a make good, a karmic make good. It's like, okay, we let that kid out to dry, but we haven't given Freddie a shutout in a real long time.
Yeah.
Let's just give him the bagel
and,
you know, let his stat book show that, you know, he blanked them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Clean sheet.
100%.
I don't think there's anything to learn from that performance because Detroit was gutted.
Detroit's the worst team in the league.
And they were shorthanded.
And they were shorthanded. Absolutely. The only thing you can take away was they did what they were supposed to do. Much like the Raptors, you know, laying the beat down on the Knicks, and they've been laying beat downs on the bad teams all year. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to win close. If you are truly a good team, and I don't know if the Leafs are, that's what you're supposed to do against the bad team.
You know, they ran out of gas on Saturday night against Colorado, and they were pretty lucky to walk away with the win in regulation, at least.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it had been a pretty long week, and you're playing at high altitude at the end of a road trip.
Yep.
I'm not surprised they were barely hanging on by the end. Someone tweeted out, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, but somebody tweeted out to us, the blue wave is back.
Yeah.
Holy Jesus, that ever true?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And now we'll see. You got back-to-back against Buffalo. The problem with the team is their margin for error is so small because of just the first 25 games. You know, it's like they had to win that game.
Yeah, they got
to
go on a run.
And they've got to, you know, Buffalo right now is on their swoon for the second year in a row. Okay, you got to win both those games because eventually you're going to be playing, you know, St. Louis and Pittsburgh and Boston, and you're going to be playing the hard teams. You've got to get these two. You've got to get these twos now.
Yeah, you need them in regulation when you're playing teams in your own division.
Yep.
You can't be giving away easy points either.
Yeah.
The Buffalo, I mean, you're not worried about Buffalo making some kind of run or fighting for that final playoff spot. You know, but you are watching Montreal at this point and Tampa Bay as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, these are teams you're going to have to be neck and neck with for the remainder of the season. I think that Sheldon Keefe has obviously made meaningful tactical changes.
Yes.
I'm actually kind of shocked at how substantial they are.
Mm-hmm.
Usually a new coach just goes in, starts babbling about how we're going to get our fitness level up, and then takes 20 games to try and get
We're going to bag skate these guys, and that's how we'll do it.
Yeah. You know, that's always the classic line, by the way. Yeah. You know what? We're just going to get this team as fit as possible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Total stalling tactic.
In football, it's, you know, we got to toughen up. We got to run the ball more. And, you know, that's, yeah, right.
But he's made meaningful strategic changes, both in terms of the lineup organization and even just how they play on the ice.
Yep, how they play, more about puck possession. The minutes seem to be up for the Stars. They started one of the games with Tyson Barry and Morgan Riley, who's still not playing great.
That's a concern, and I have a hot take on this.
Ooh, go.
I don't think he's going to be a Leaf after the summer.
Damn. How many years does he have left?
One after this.
One after. Oh, you think they'll trade him?
Yeah.
Ooh, that is a hot take.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say that with great certainty, but just something in my gut. Mm. He's not having a good year. There's a new administration. There's a bunch of guys whose numbers are up. If you want to keep Tyson Barry and he has a great year. Now, he's getting older. He's probably not going to deliver the same way on the next contract as he is on this one. But
I wonder how. I wonder how Keefe and Dubas. I wonder how they feel about Morgan Riley.
Yeah, I don't know. It's. I mean, did you notice who Babcock thanked on the way out? Lou Lamoriello.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Tannenbaum.
Yeah.
Morgan Riley.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
No, I'm not saying they're mad at him. That's not the implication at all.
Morgan's like, don't thank me. Don't thank me.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I think he's just a consummate professional.
Yep.
But what I'm... do you remember you and I talked to Dubas when he was the general manager of Sault Ste. Marie? We were on the air. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how he had to retrain players how not to panic with the puck.
Yeah.
How to that point, players had always been taught just get it up on the glass, get it out of the zone. Like, just get us out of danger. And he said it takes time to teach them. When you have the puck on your stick, take a moment and make decisions.
Yeah.
Make choices. I'll be interested to see how Morgan Riley does. Because he's obviously great, like, helping bring the puck up.
Yeah.
But his thinking, I'm not saying he can't do it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see how he adjusts to this way where a guy like him is absolutely going to be integral to the thinking that goes on the ice. Will he be able to do it at the level that Dubas and Keefe will expect?
It's to me, it's the number one question. About this team. Like, my biggest concern is Morgan Riley.
Right.
You know.
Justifiably so, because we're plays the a most quarter of the season in, and he hasn't been good.
No, he hasn't been. He plays the most minutes. He's the number one defenseman, and he's played really bad.
Right.
It's hard for him. It's hard for him not to be.
So that's my hot take.
Yeah.
It's and good. I'm not completely sold on it.
Yeah.
But I'm just, I got to, as my Italian mother-in-law would say, I got a pensiere, a little thought that's perking up in my head.
You know what thought was going through my head?
Is it about the shows you'd like to go see?
No. It was actually like, you know how we had Feces Flinger in the city?
I tried to not pay attention to that story.
Oh, I it's easy. Not like all I wanted to happen, because I think this would the whole universe would have been together. Remember when Chair Tosser, when she was coming out of the court and she posed for pictures? If she posed, if Feces Flinger had decided he was going to take all of his feces flinging and focused it solely on her, I think then we all would have been okay with it all.
Time and place.
Yeah. Yeah. She
maybe not okay, but more okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's the great thing I've said about her, we all unite around our hate for Chair Tosser.
Do you remember a long time ago at the AGO, there was some guy who barfed on a bunch of paintings and he said it was like his artistic statement?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Painting barfer?
Yeah.
That guy actually asked one of my old girlfriends out.
Really?
Yeah, before I started dating her, I was like, oh, really? What was she like? She's just like, no. No, man.
Wow.
Painting barfer.
Yeah.
People do weird, dumb things, eh?
He still ranks number one over him versus Feces Flinger and Chair Tosser.
Yeah, they're all... That's a bad podium. Bad podium.
Also, to DC out there, don't. I know you want to turn these people into superheroes. It's not going to work. Okay?
Worst Marvel team up ever.
Yeah.
Well, no. The new Avengers suck, Matt.
No, if Marvel did it, it would work. But DC's going to do it. And they're going to fail.
Zack Snyder and his Snyder cut of the Flingers.
Yeah.
Is that the name of this superhero group? The Flingers?
The Flingers. Oh, yeah.
The Dischargers?
Yeah.
God. Okay, I don't want to talk any more about hockey.
Well, we only have like we only have two minutes left.
Oh, really? Jesus, we talked for a long time about that.
It was heavy.
Yeah, it's hard not to get sucked in. I mean, it's such a crazy week. Okay, I got a couple quick NFL questions. We won't be able to, there's no point in previewing the games today because by the time this gets posted.
Yeah, most of the American Thanksgiving games will be done.
So I'm just going to go with some rapid fire stuff here with you. Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Do we still like him?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't think so.
He's just, yeah.
He's just complained a little too much too long, right?
Yeah. Like, it's funny. You hear him talk, in some ways he's so smart and interesting, and then other times he just seems just not very likable.
You know, I want to love him.
Yeah.
But I just can't.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson, do we love him?
Oh, we love Lamar Jackson.
It's always amazing when a guy plays like someone plays in college, but in the pros, and everyone's like, holy, it's like Johnny Manziel. Remember, he was going to light the league on fire with his arms and his legs?
Yeah.
Didn't that from Johnny? Kind of happening for Lamar Jackson. Okay, final question here. Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Game manager.
Yes.
He's been tossed around a lot this week.
He is. He's a game manager. He's a better version than the one that Peyton Manning was his last year when they won the Super Bowl, where he actively tried to give Carolina the Super Bowl when Denver beat them. Yeah, but that's what Brady is. He absolutely is. Like, if you look at his numbers, they're not great. Now, it's not all his fault. There's no Gronkowski. There's no great receivers out there. So they are defense, special teams, and then don't make mistakes. And there'll be four times a game. There'll be a third down conversion and near the goal, near in the red zone, where you're going to have to get a touchdown instead of a field goal.
You know what's interesting? If they won the Super Bowl this year,
yeah.
It would be an interesting bookend to his career. Because when he won the first one against game the Rams, manager. He was a game manager. And then he became the most dominant quarterback in history.
Yeah.
And then what if he lost or won his last Super Bowl and he came back to being a game manager again? What an arc that would be.
Oh, yeah. It ends where it started.
I can't cheer for them.
Yeah.
But if that did happen, it'd be kind of cool.
It would be. It would be fascinating.
All right. I don't got anything else. Well, I actually have so much more.
Yeah, we got no time.
You know, we just don't. Nope. Should we go to two a week?
If we can.
It's just hard with your schedule.
Yeah, it's hard with scheduling. That's
because it can only happen in the morning. Mm-hmm. I guess we could record in the evening.
Yeah. The thing about the evening is it's got to be after like 7, like just traffic.
I got to tell you, Maddie. I shut her down.
Yeah.
Like when I get home after a long day, like, you know how you don't own pajamas?
Yeah.
I would only own pajamas. Yeah.
Like you come home and you are human sweatpants.
It's so true.
Yeah.
How are you doing tonight? Fuzzy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Matt, that was not fun, but I hope somebody enjoyed.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for everyone for listening to that one. We promise the next one there'll be more movies and you know, food rankings.
I was going to talk to you about the movie advent calendar that I'm making for Charlotte.
Oh my God. We'll save that for next week.
Next week. So basically here's the gist of it. And everybody can help me make this is, you know, there's the chocolate advent calendar.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do one for movies where you pop open the door and then that's the movie we watch today.
Aw, that's great.
The 25 movies of Christmas.
Nice.
So you're a genius at this kind of stuff. Maybe you can help me plan the program.
Here's first part of the plan. Don't put The Shining in. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.